InfoWars.com studios. It's The Real News with your host, David Knight.
Welcome on this Friday, September 7th, 2018. Well, CNN got what they want. Marco Rubio got what he wants. And Twitter has taken Alex Jones and InfoWars off because he had the audacity to confront the anti-free speech coward, as Alex correctly called Oliver Dorsey, had the audacity to confront him. And this is something that, as Breitbart and others have pointed out, it's kind of interesting to see. A tweet from Oliver Dorsey was published at 5:45 p.m. Eastern Time, coinciding precisely with Twitter's publicly announcing the ban. A lot of people have noticed this. No coordination here, is there? Is there any coordination going on between the social media companies and people like Marco Rubio, Tom Cotton, and the Democrats as well? Saying, you know, we've talked to you guys about this behind closed doors, and I think you've agreed with this, that you're going to protect the narrative that's put out there by the American government, but you're going to shut down things that are done by China and Russia and so forth, right? You're going to do that for us, right? You're going to use this as a propaganda platform. Look, let's understand what is really behind this. And if Marco Rubio and others, Marco Rubio eventually admitted that, yeah, he was lying. I don't know who you are, Alex. I don't go to your website. He knew what it was. Like I said yesterday, what business would he have going to a hearing about social media censorship if he didn't know anything about Alex Jones and InfoWars? That was a top story about social media censorship for the last month. And if they really wanted to do something about this, why wouldn't they call Alex Jones to testify? Why wouldn't they call the Prager people to testify about what had happened? Why wouldn't they call any number of people who have talked about how traffic has been shut down by Google, how their engagement has been shut down by Facebook or by Twitter? Why wouldn't they call any of those people and have them talk? Typically, when you have a problem and you want to do something about it, you'll interview people who are victims of whatever you're trying to fix. And so they don't have anybody that are conservatives at any level testifying about what has been done to them by these three giant corporations that the government has put into place. Let's understand what is going on here. This is a partnership. It is corporate fascism. When you look at the Trans-Pacific Partnership, that's what TPP was. It was a Trans-Pacific Partnership. There was also a transatlantic partnership, TTIP. All these things are partnerships, like toll roads are partnerships. Public-private partnerships. You see that being used over and over again by the Democrats, Republicans. They're partnering with large corporations. When you merge large corporations together with government, you have fascism. You have crony capitalism. I'm totally amazed to see some of these doctrinaire libertarians, like the people at Reason. That's why I don't call myself a libertarian. I call myself libertarian, because I'm concerned about liberty and I want it to work. It isn't some abstract concept that you blindly dig a stake into the ground and defend everything that corporations do. A lot of the stuff that corporations do is indefensible. This is a good example of it. You know, one of the things about socialists and Democrats, they can never see the government do anything wrong. And a lot of problems with the libertarians are they can never see corporations do anything wrong. And they can't see it when the corporations are being used by the government either. They're blind to that. And there's an excellent article I didn't spend time on yesterday. I tweeted about it briefly. I'm still up on Twitter. I don't know how much longer that's going to be. If you go to my Twitter account, Libertarian, you'll see that I have a link there to where you can find me on Gab when they eventually take me down, as they will all libertarians and conservatives off of Twitter. This is eventually going to happen to everybody. I see that they're now working at going after Mark Dice, but of course, they're just going down the list. If they can take one of the highest profile conservatives, libertarians, supporters of President Trump down and do it publicly without any repercussions, they can do it to anybody. We'll be right back.
You InfoWars.com studios in Austin, Texas. It's your host, David Knight.
Welcome on this Friday, September 7th, 2018. I'm David Knight, your host. We have entered a new era. We have InfoWars now without social media. Of course, we're going to be on Gab. We're going to be on BitChute and Reel.video and many other places, Minds.com. There's a lot of places that people are going to be going to because they're going to be leaving, and they are already leaving. You've had a tremendous amount of millennials that have left, conservatives that have left Facebook and Twitter and other places because, quite frankly, folks, these are not businesses. This is what libertarians, like the ones at Reason, don't really understand. If you are a business and you're going to support private property, you're going to put your profits over your politics. I understand, you know, when we look at what happened with In-N-Out Burger, they got hit. I said somebody in California, some state legislator in California said, look at this, they gave $25,000, I think was the figure, something to Republicans. Well, the fact is they gave many times more than that amount to Democrats. And the same thing happened with Elon Musk. Somebody, a Republican, shamed him for giving money, but he's given orders of magnitude more money to the Democrats. They have to pay for protection. This is the kind of corrupt government that we have. As I've said many times, campaign finance reform is totally meaningless as long as you have so much power in Washington. If you've got that kind of power, it is a black hole, sucking in all kinds of money and corruption into that black hole. And the more the government intrudes itself into our lives, the more everybody has to go there and buy political protection from these people. When you look at these corporations giving tens of thousands of dollars to the Republican and Democrat parties at the same time, this is nothing but overt corruption, power politics. You pay us to stay in business. And you also do what we say to stay in business. And that means that if you've got somebody out there who is questioning the official government narrative, you shut them down. Whether it's InfoWars or whether it's WikiLeaks, it doesn't matter. Anybody that questions the official government narrative must be taken down. They're going to demand that. And these people who have been given a lot of money and a lot of power by Washington, and make no doubt about it, folks, they have been given this power. You don't get to the billion-dollar level without doing deals in Washington, not anymore. This is not a meritocracy anymore. This is a bureaucracy and a plutocracy. It's a few people aligned with a political bureaucracy that's running America. And this is the way that things are in Washington. If you don't understand that, if you don't understand how these companies were funded, I've mentioned this many times, go back and take a look at how the CIA openly created a venture capital firm to help establish a couple of hundred different corporations in Silicon Valley that would do their bidding. The internet itself was a creation of DARPA, a DARPA psychologist. It is a tool of psychological control, a tool that gives them precise feedback about how their psychological control is working. They don't need to have the LifeLog project if they can give some money to some college nerd named Mark Zuckerberg and let him do it for them and put it out there in the public domain. It's perfect plausible deniability. They can scrape all that information off of there. They don't need to do the Cambridge Analytics thing. But of course, the Cambridge Analytics thing that caused the left to get so upset with Facebook, you had Obama's data person bragging about how they had done the same thing to a greater extent in the previous election. Nobody paid any attention to that. The left didn't mind that until they saw that it was being used against them. And now they're in the same position. They don't mind the censorship against Alex Jones and InfoWars because they don't understand that same kind of censorship and control is going to be used against them. A few people do understand that. A few people do on the left, but very, very, very few. And usually those people who do understand it are hammered by those who just don't like Alex Jones or who don't like Donald Trump or who don't like conservatives or libertarians. They're hammered down. This is not about private corporations doing their private thing. Take a look at what has happened with Nike, for example. They don't care. They're going to go out there. They're going to lose billions of dollars on their stock market capitalization. They're going to alienate customers You've got the same thing going on with Levi Strauss. They're going to work on gun control with Bloomberg. They don't care. The profits don't mean anything to them anymore because they can always get more profits. There's always a greater fool on the stock market that'll eventually buy their stock. And they can get government subsidies if they do what the politicians want them to do. It's not just venture capital that is out there. There's all kinds of ways that they can channel money to these corporations. And that's one of the reasons why the corporations give them money in the first place. It's a rational investment. It's one of the best returns on investment a big corporation can get. You grease the palm of a politician, you give him $10,000, you might get a $10 million contract out of that. Very likely will. What kind of return on investment? How can you match that kind of return on investment anywhere else? You can't. That is what feeds this kind of corruption that we have here. And the Democrats say, well, what we need are more rules and mandates. Rules and mandates don't work. That's why I don't believe that approaching this from an antitrust standpoint is going to work, because the government, Republican and Democrat, want precisely what is happening. You saw that, as I mentioned yesterday, when I talked in great detail about Marco Rubio, demanding that these people do precisely what they are doing. It's not just the Chinese that are out there using social media credit scores and using that to punish their citizens if they do mocking satire of President Xi, comparing him to Winnie the Pooh. It's not just the Saudis who are saying, we will jail you if you do satire or if you put up religious postings that we don't agree with. You have the UK and the US government, you know, UK especially, coming after people if they put up religious postings that they don't like. You talk about your Christian beliefs, they're going to attack you. I mean, it's been about 6 years now since I saw Rowan Atkinson talk about an act that they were trying to get passed. And one of the examples that he used was how the British government had attacked a guy who had a store. And on that store, he had some Christian video that was playing, talking about the Ten Commandments or something. And the government, the British government, came in and punished him. And that was one. Another guy was arrested. He said it was pretty much like a comedy routine that they had had, where a black guy was arrested and the charges were simply walking about. Walking about freely or whatever. I mean, they didn't need a reason. He gave three examples. And the arrest of an individual because the policeman didn't like him, that was overturned. The other example that he gave was overturned. But the one about the Christian was not overturned. So we may talk about Saudi Arabia and say, oh, isn't it great that we don't live in Saudi Arabia where you can get arrested if you express your religious beliefs on social media or if you mock the crown prince of Saudi Arabia. Don't mock him, MBS. We live in that same kind of society. As a matter of fact, the European Union is demanding that if they have an exception to something that is put up on social media, that it be taken down within a very short fixed time period. They are making these kinds of demands. They were the first ones to do this kind of stuff to social media. Say, we don't like it, you take it down right away. And that's essentially what Marco Rubio, that little snake, was doing on Capitol Hill. It's like, you're not going to allow these, I understand that this could be a good thing. Social media could be a good thing, but sometimes it's used poorly. Sometimes we have hate speech out there. The same stuff coming out of his mouth that you've heard coming out of the left, coming out of these people trying to justify their corporate fascism, their censorship, coming out of the mouth of Marco Rubio. Because you substitute for social media, substitute free speech. I understand that free speech can be a good thing, but sometimes it takes a bad turn. We don't like what people are putting up sometimes with social media. Sometimes it can be hateful. If it attacks politicians like Marco Rubio, it can be hate speech then. Of course, he doesn't define it that way. We don't have any definition of hate speech. Hate speech is to the First Amendment what an assault rifle is to the Second Amendment. We'll be right back. Stay with us. I'm David Knight.
I'm racing.
Welcome back. We're right here in Texas. not too far from the place in the song. But we're going to talk about what happened in Washington yesterday, because unfortunately, Washington intrudes itself into every corner of our lives, even if we live thousands of miles away from it. I don't know. I had to check the map, but maybe we live further away here in Texas from Washington than the people on the East Coast and the original 13 colonies lived from London. Maybe we need to break off. I think it's about time. But we're going to talk about this corporate government partnership here to censor people. This is fascism. It is the merger of corporations and governments to do the bidding of both the conservatives, both the Republicans and the Democrats, the deep state, the establishment state. Anybody that supports President Trump, you support individual liberty, you question the government narrative on stories, you're going to be shut down. They're going to come after you. We've seen that with WikiLeaks. Now they're coming after InfoWars, and it's not going to stop with us. Going to go right down the list. Just like they've got a list of countries they're going to overthrow, they're going to go right down the list of other people. And, of course, it already affects you. It affects your free speech. You know, there's freedom of the press, which is on our side. But then freedom of speech is what you have to say. And that's why this social media issue is so important. It is more than just taking down voices in the press, busting up printing presses, if you will, or silencing broadcasts. It is also about your ability to share that information. That's your speech. Looking at something that you see, that you want to pass on, because you either agree with it or you disagree with it. That kind of free thought and free speech is not going to be allowed by our corporate deep state masters that are allied with both Republicans and Democrats. Republicans like Marco Rubio, for example. That dog and pony show that they did this week, they weren't concerned at all about social media censorship. If you heard the back and forth, and we'll go over that a little bit more with Rubio and these people there in Washington, he was just making sure they were going to do what he wanted them to do. He wasn't concerned about your free speech. He wasn't concerned about freedom of the press. He was concerned about his control over them. You're going to do what we said you're going to do, right? You're going to support the American agenda, right? What the Atlantic Council wants you to do, right? What NATO wants you to do, right? Because they've got some events on the horizon, and they want to make sure these guys are going to toe the line. They're going to shut down anybody that points out that the emperor doesn't have any clothes. You can't even point out that the emperor's fly is down without them coming after you, let alone that he's butt naked. And we have seen this time and again, and we're going to talk a little bit more about some of the missing articles of clothing on the government narratives later on in the broadcast. But let's talk about the censorship first. We had Jack Dorsey admitting that Twitter unfairly shadow banned 600,000 accounts. See, they've gone from shadow banning, covertly banning people, to overtly banning people. And if you don't stop this, this is setting a very dangerous precedent for everybody, left and right. Anybody that is not CNN or Fox News is going to be affected by this. The establishment people who are doing what the establishment government, Republican and Democrat, want to do, they'll be fine. They'll be fine. They've always had their Operation Mockingbird operatives out there, and they will continue to have them. They have to have somebody that's going to tell their story. So Fox News and CNN will be just fine. The people who give the Republican partisan side on talk radio will be just fine. It's going to be those other voices out there saying, wait a minute, I'm not too sure that this is right. You're not going to have that kind of comment, and you are not going to be allowed to second guess anything that they have to say. And so Dorsey said, yeah, it was unfair. We corrected it, however. But of course, their shares are tanking for 2 days in a row. Why would that be? Well, it might be because when they're out there suggesting that you unfollow people, what are they doing with that? They're promoting disengagement with their platform. What kind of a business model is that? Well, it's not a business model, says Wall Street. Any more than what Nike is doing or what Levi Strauss is doing is a business model. It is a political model. They're willing to expend their capital to get politics. They're not doing political capital. This is actual dollars and cents capital that they're doing out there. And it doesn't make any sense to the people on Wall Street. So they're selling the stock. Like, you guys are going to trash your company. You're going to trash your profits for your political agendas. And that's why I said this is a kind of corporate fascism. This is crony capitalism. This is what allows, you know, when people like Reason support so-called private property like this and say, oh, it's just their private property, they can do whatever they want. You support that kind of crony capitalism. You support that kind of corporate fascism. What you have done in making that argument is help Bernie Sanders and the progressive socialists, because they think that this is what real capitalism is. It isn't. It's corruption. Call it what it is. If you can't distinguish what is going on here in social media from real capitalism and real free markets, you can't defend real free markets and real capitalism. You can't defend it. This is not what this is. This is not real private property being exercised here. And let's just go back and remember what Project Veritas did. And I think this is one of the reasons why Twitter was reluctant to put some of this stuff out. Remember when they got the interviews of the people at Twitter? They were talking about how they were shadow banning people at the same time they were denying that was happening. Let's go back and play that flashback.
Just go to a random tweet and like just look at the followers. Yeah. We'll all be like, guns, God, America. Like, yeah. With the American flag and like,
the cross. Guns, yeah, God, no, America. Really, yeah. Let's just take that out.
Yeah. Like, who says that? Who talks like that? It's for sure a bot.
A bot or just a
or a redneck.
Redneck's gonna exist.
Yeah. So can you get rid of them?
I wouldn't know.
Can you get rid of them?
Yeah.
Like, how do you do that?
You just delete them, but like the problem is there are hundreds of thousands of them, so you've got to like write algorithms that do it for you.
How do you know if it's a bot and not another person?
Oh, you use machine learning.
How do you know if it's a bot or not? Well, you use machine learning. I know it's a little bit difficult to hear this. It's live in a cafeteria.
Like, people were like, American guns, can you, like, write an algorithm and just take all those people out?
Oh, yeah. That's actually how we do it, yeah. It's pretty cool. You should be an engineer. You're gonna do this shit.
So can you just write them against, like, so, like, say someone has, like, Trump in the name, like, or, like, conservative or like
America first.
Yeah.
Yeah, you just look for some terms like that. So let's hold it right there. That you might remember that. That was Project Veritas. They did that with many different engineers at Twitter and other places, talking about how they were doing this, bragging about it. You know, hey, these are some cool people. I want to impress them so I can talk about how we're doing it. We could see that they were doing it. You know, but people don't want to really pay much attention to those algorithms. They don't want to pay any attention to the people actually confessing on tape that they're doing this. We're talking about this between the staff and I during the break. And Dan said, well, you know, what about Westboro Baptist? Aren't they belittling people? Yeah, they do. But they're okay. They're still on Twitter. What about Sarah Jeong? Oh, that's right. Yeah, she's fine. Of course, if you just change what she said about white people to black people and you put it out as Candace Owen did, as a black person, oh, then you get shut down by these people. Oh, they're not paying any attention to your political content, are they? We'll be right back.
In a world of universal deceit, telling the truth is a revolutionary act. And now, your host, David Knight.
I just played for you one of the many videos that was done by Project Veritas exposing engineers with social media bragging about how they shut down these conservatives that just want to talk about God, guns, and America. America. MAGA. Oh, yeah, we look for that kind of stuff. We can shut them down. But, of course, Jack Dorsey, CEO of Twitter, says, no, Twitter doesn't use political ideology to make decisions, whether related to ranking content on our service or how we enforce our rules. And that would be a lie, an obvious lie. You know, one of the first people that was high profile that got taken off was Roger Stone. I talked to Roger when it happened, and as we were pointing out then, take a look at that time. Take a look at what Roger Stone had put out that was supposedly abusive, and it wasn't. It wasn't abusive, and it wasn't nearly as strong in any. It was an argument that he got in with some people, and of course, he made some comments. You know, somebody comes at you on social media and makes a troll comment. Well, sometimes you troll them back. Sometimes you get sharp back with them. That's okay. It's the real world here. And if you look at what Roger Stone had written and you compare it to what Keith Olbermann had done, and Keith Olbermann had done this many, many more times than Roger Stone. He had used far stronger language than Roger Stone, very vulgar language in many cases, very abusive language in many cases, and done it far more extensively than Roger Stone, many, many more times than anything that you could come up with a Roger Stone. And yet nothing was done to Keith Olbermann. The same thing is we compare the tweets of Sarah Jeong, who was hired by the New York Times, even after her racist tweets were put out, her hatred for white people, especially white males like me. Nothing was done about it. As a matter of fact, when Candace Owens put it out, being black, she was offended by that kind of racism. When she put out the same tweets that Sarah Jeong was never censored for and didn't prevent her from being hired by the New York Times, didn't cause her to be fired by the New York Times, it's, oh, it's just satire. It's okay. Liberals are doing that. It's okay to have that kind of racism. It's okay to have that kind of viciousness if you're the right kind of person. You know, if you have the right identity or you work for the right people or you have the right political views, abusive behavior is just fine. And so when Candace Owens did it, just took those tweets verbatim and put them out. It wasn't satire in those cases because she just changed white to black and put all the stuff about, oh, you stinky, trashy people and everything. But just instead of it being white people, put out black people. They blocked her tweets. Until somebody pointed it out to them, and then they got some humans involved. So they have algorithms that are putting that out, algorithms that are looking at conservatives, but not looking at liberals. It's okay for some people to do it. And so it's okay for Oliver Dorsey and for CNN to engage in abusive behavior. It's okay for them to trash freedom of the press and freedom of speech. But if you counterattack, if you criticize them for that, then you get taken off. And I'll just say one more thing, too, about Roger Stone. It was after they took Roger Stone off, he had another Twitter account that was just called Stone Cold Truth. And all that account did was just tweet out news articles without any comment. And a couple of weeks later, they took that off. So it is the political positions of people that are the determining factor here. Not anything that is abusive, not like hate speech. Like I said before, hate speech is this undefined term that is being used by these people to attack the First Amendment in the same way that this undefined term assault weapon, we don't know what an assault weapon is. It's something that they find offensive and scary. Just like if they find your speech offensive, if they hate your speech, then that is hate speech. I guess that's the definition of hate speech. Hate speech is any speech that a Democrat or a liberal doesn't like. They can use that to take you off. But if you criticize them for hating the First Amendment, if you criticize them for hating the Constitution, for hating our God-given rights, then that's hate speech. You will be shut down if you criticize them for that. And so I'm going to play a little bit for you of the video going back and forth. This is the video for which Alex Jones was permanently banned. Permanently banned. I want you to hear a little bit of this. Let's go ahead and run that while we still got time. Let's run video clip number one.
I want to get this down too. This is unbelievable. I was literally saying I don't see the criminal news network here, but indeed we do, right there at the front of the line at the trough, to try to get in there and try to shut down conservative libertarian speech. And of course he comes from the loins of Glenn Beck, the king. I mean, look at those eyes, folks. If you want
to see, I used to work for Glenn Beck.
The eyes of a rat.
Oliver Dorsey.
No, I'm sure it's just
Darcy.
I'm looking at look at those eyes.
Get my Dorsey's Darcy's mixed up. They're so alike.
And the criminals at CNN, all their warmongering and death, all their fake news. And then running around trying to police the internet and try to shut people down. And then you think people are so stupid. On CNN, a week later, you say no one's censoring anybody. No one's pushing for censoring. And then you say that Trump is the one attacking the press, but only doesn't stand up to your lies. Just look at this guy's eyes, man. That is who will rule your life. Him and people like Stelter. That is who on Earth. Look at that smile.
Alex, you know, I'd say, so I've known Oliver quite a long time. Good to see you again, Oliver.
Good to see you, Chuck.
Good to see you. You know, he's from Fresno, and he knows that. Because, you know, in Fresno, we actually believe in free speech. And
this is somebody else who just shows up and says, I've known this guy for a long time.
He
used to be honest. Now he's turned.
Beforehand, he worked for Spikeback. And, of course, I and many other people in the conservative movement helped this guy's career along. And now he's decided that now that he works for CNN, he's going to go and try and shut down voices.
Look, I mean, he's even more evil looking at
Bernie. Something to think about the decisions that you made.
Chrissy, you don't even respond because we're just scum. You sit up there at CNN with no viewers, no followers. Everyone can't stand you. And no matter, you just shut everyone down on Earth, no one will like you. You understand that? You'll never have billions and billions of fans and followers. You'll never have people that love you.
Do you have anything else you'd like to say, Alex?
You are a dishonorable liar who would never even dare have me on your little tiny shows when you and Stelter call me a virus. You are a virus to America and freedom. You are authoritarianism. Just look in those eyes. The hunger to silence America. The hunger to extinguish the First Amendment. The hunger to deceive. But he can't do it because the fire of liberty is not going to be knocked out. And I want you to know I'm starting to come up here a lot. We're going to be seeing a lot of each other.
That's good.
Just so you know.
Always good to see you.
Yeah.
Is there anything else you'd like to say?
Oh, no, you don't talk back to mere slaves. You just act, calling everybody's sponsors to get them to dump you, working with Media Matters and the Nazi collaborator George Soros,
all right,
smiling like a possum that climbed out of the rear end of a dead cow.
You used that one several times.
That's what you look like.
You need to come up with something.
You look like a possum that got caught doing some really nasty stuff, in my view. You're a public figure, too. If I go to Twitter and say, he's bullying me, I'm only trying to deplatform him everywhere and celebrating it, and then insulting my viewers a week later saying no one's doing it. How dumb do you think your viewers are? They have no memory like Dari from Finding Nemo? So you can't respond. All you do is deceive. Your job is to be a disruptor.
What can I respond to? This is not a...
Are you saying the left isn't trying to deplatform conservatives?
This is not a... I'm not doing an interview with you.
Exactly. There you go. Just look at it. Look at that person. Just stare at it. Look at that. He thinks he's going to beat America. He wants to politically mount us out of the hall. He thinks he can deceive. Oliver Darcy. That lady come.
What was that?
Anything to say?
No, I have nothing to say to Alex. Good seeing him here.
Yeah, all he wants to do is silence everyone so he can then lie about him and get away with it.
You're broadcasting on Twitter right now, I think, right?
We're going out a lot of places.
Right. You're being really silenced?
Yeah, you've been trying to silence me there. Keep asking why I'm there and then lying about what I say. You're ashamed. It's blown up in your face. Doesn't matter if the New York Times says our viewers are down by half. It's not true. Record traffic and record support. Which you guys don't have. You have to be propped up by kingpins and corrupt corporations and foreign Gulf War dictators who launch fake wars in Arab Springs and back ISIS and John McCain and all those other crypt keepers.
All right, so you heard that. That's some of the encounter that Alex Jones had. That's what got him permanently banned, according to Jack Dorsey. It's okay for Oliver Darcy to call for Twitter to ban us. That's what he was doing right after you had the collusion of all the other big media or internet companies shutting us down. And he was lobbying Twitter and saying, shut them down. But if Alex Jones confronts him on that, you know, it's okay for him to do that. But if Alex Jones confronts him, then Alex Jones gets shut down. We'll be right back. Welcome back. I'm David Knight on this September the 7th, 2018. And, of course, the news hitting everywhere yesterday was right after the hearings where Jack Dorsey says, no, there's no political bias at Twitter. They permanently banned Alex Jones for confronting Oliver Darcy of CNN, formerly of The Blaze, Glenn Beck's organization, always attacking InfoWars. Both those organizations always attacking InfoWars. And Oliver Darcy at CNN had been leading the charge to censor InfoWars for quite some time. So Alex Jones confronted him there outside the congressional hearings. And just go back to August the 10th. Remember, it was August the 6th that anybody on the internet moved to shut down InfoWars all at once. No conspiracy going on here at all. No, that was just a coincidence, folks. Nobody got any instructions from the Democrat and Republican politicians to do any of that. They just decide to do it on their own. And of course, they don't like InfoWars because most of these guys are leaning left. Nevertheless, they're not concerned about any real conspiracy here or the appearance of a conspiracy. So they all did that except for Twitter. And the reluctance of Twitter, a lot of people say, well, why is that happening? It might be because of Project Veritas and what they'd exposed. I don't know. But they didn't do it. And so Oliver Darcy, then, as we'd had CNN pushing and pushing and pushing, saying, why are these people shut down? Why are they shut down? And you had Democrat politicians pushing in the previous hearings. Why haven't you stopped InfoWars information from trending? It's like, well, I guess we should shut down what the people are saying. It was trending because you, the people, were passing these articles along. And so you had Senator Chris Murphy doing that. Now you got Marco Rubio, the Republican, out there saying, well, we want you guys to shut down anything. You know, when this social media stuff goes bad and we don't like hate speech, we want you guys to shut that down for us. You know, people like Alex Jones. He didn't say that, but that's the implied thing here. Speech that they don't like or authoritarian governments that they don't like. Wait a minute, I thought the definition of authoritarian governments was places where you don't have any free speech. That's one of the key definitions of an authoritarian government. And so, you know, other authoritarian governments besides the United States government and its crony partners in this kind of fascism, corporate fascism, this merger of states and corporations. And so you had CNN that had been lobbying for us to be shut down. When that didn't happen completely, Oliver Darcy started lobbying Twitter from his position at CNN. Twitter admits, this is the August the 10th article, Twitter admits that InfoWars violated its rules, but it says it will remain on the platform. Now, the interesting thing I find in this August the 10th story from Oliver Darcy, the guy that Alex encountered there and supposedly bullied, telling them that he wanted to censor. And, of course, Darcy wouldn't say anything. As Dan said, it's hard to respond when you don't have a teleprompter there at CNN. So he just said there, wouldn't say anything. But he also, in this article, even though he quoted Jack Dorsey, CEO of Twitter, saying they haven't broken any rules. I didn't take him down because they didn't break any rules. He also, in his article, Oliver Darcy at the time, quoted another executive, Del Harvey, at Twitter, saying essentially the same thing, so that they violated our policies, we would take an action. However, throughout this article, he begins, the very first thing he says in this article, a Twitter spokesperson, no name, this is an anonymous Twitter spokesperson that Oliver Darcy has talked to. And this unnamed anonymous Twitter spokesperson is referred to throughout the article. Virtually every paragraph has some conversation with this imaginary character. So these guys like Oliver Darcy at CNN or like the people at the Washington Post or New York Times, they use these anonymous sources all the time. And it could be kind of like the big rabbit Harvey that Jimmy Stewart talked to all the time. It could be a puka. Who knows? But he's got this Twitter spokesperson. This keeps telling him all this stuff about what they're going to do. A Twitter spokesperson said the company concluded that more than a dozen tweets included in CNN's Thursday report. See, they keep doing these reports over and over again. Seven were found to have violated Twitter's rules. Nevertheless, the people on the record, Jack Dorsey and this other executive at Twitter, Del Harvey, they go on the record and say, well, there weren't any rules that were broken. Now, I said at the time, I said it's just a matter of time before Jack Dorsey does this. Because he did say, as he was pressured by people like Oliver Darcy, he did say, well, they didn't break any rules, but we're changing our rules, and we're going to take a look at what people do off-platform as well. So I said, they're going to take us off. It's a known thing. It's just a matter of time before they do that. Alex knew that as well, of course. But in this article here, Oliver Darcy is putting pressure on them, but also giving cover to them. That's the key thing that this hearing was about. It was about giving cover to their partners in Silicon Valley to do what the government wanted them to do. This is not private corporations putting their profits behind their political agenda strictly, because they understand they're playing the long game. They're doing what the politicians want them to do. And so in this article, Twitter spokesman says this, and a couple of paragraphs down, he says, the spokesman said, and then the Twitter spokesman was not immediately able to provide CNN with specific tweets and so forth. We will continue to review any content that is flagged to us and take action as appropriate, said the Twitter spokesperson. You see the tactic being used here by Oliver Darcy, the so-called reporter at CNN? The Twitter spokesperson. CNN's investigation found that InfoWars and Jones's Twitter accounts had published content that degraded groups of people on the basis of their religion and gender identity, engaged in the harassment of individuals. You know, the harassment of saying, you are a lying piece of scum, Oliver Darcy. I get the Dorseys and Darcys mixed up in this conspiracy there. You are a lying piece of scum who's trying to shut down freedom of the press and free speech. Oh, that's not allowed. That's degrading. I think the actions of CNN and Oliver Darcy are degrading. And there's an excellent article on Breitbart. And it says this came out yesterday. And they said, Jack Dorsey says that Twitter is a public square more than five times. Now, there is a big legal implication to the fact that Jack Dorsey is referring to Twitter as a public square. And this author here at Alam Bukhari, a great job on this article. This needs to be seen by everybody. I'm going to tweet this out later. I've already tweeted out a reference to it on my Twitter account, Libertarian. And, of course, that is there for a limited time only. Take advantage of this moment to find out where you can find me on Gab once they shut me down. But anyway, in this article, he says that both sessions, Jack Dorsey, CEO of Twitter, continually referred to Twitter as either a public square or a digital public square. Now, that wording is very significant. According to U.S. law, speech and expression in the public square are protected by the First Amendment, regardless of whether the public squares are under private ownership. The precedent was set in a Supreme Court ruling back in 1946, Marsh versus Alabama. A ruling which found that a Jehovah's Witness who attempted to distribute religious materials in a company town that was entirely owned by the Gulf Shipbuilding Company could not be arrested on the grounds that she was trespassing on private property. See, what we have now is we have a cyberspace that is completely owned by three corporations. Google, Facebook, Twitter. These are public squares, said Jack Dorsey, and he said it five times, and he's absolutely right. Now, the Supreme Court decision said that this individual that they didn't want because she was distributing religious material, they could not take her off because they owned the entire town. The court concluded that since the company owned the entire town, including the sidewalks, it constituted a public square under private ownership. And that the Jehovah's Witnesses' right to free speech in the public square took priority over the company's right to remove trespassers. If Twitter is a public square under private ownership, it is obliged to protect the First Amendment rights of its users. Dorsey's entire project of controlling quote-unquote controversial health and banning constitutionally protected speech on his platform would be a violation of the First Amendment, and he would have no option but to relinquish the power of blocking and filtering users for lawful speech and instead return that power to users via optional filters. That's where it needs to be. But see, Marco Rubio and Chris Murphy want to set the filters on what you see and hear. That's the whole issue. That's why nothing is being done about this. All right, for all of you listening to this program, thanks for waking up in the morning. And if you want to wake up a little bit more, try getting some of our Wake Up America Patriot Blend coffee. You can use the code REALNEWS at checkout to save 20%. Go to InfoWarsStore.com. Many things there on sale. It's the way that you can support our freedom of the press, support your free speech to pass this along, and you can also wake up.
InfoWars.com studios in Austin, Texas. It's the Real News with your host, David Knight.
Welcome back. We're going to take a break here from the free speech stuff. We're going to get back to it. I got a couple more things I want to say. But I want to just talk about the elections a little bit. We had some results on Thursday out of Delaware. It's kind of interesting to me that you got so much publicity out of Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. And, of course, it was a big victory when she defeated the number three Democrat, I believe he was, in that congressional district. That was a big deal. Something similar to that had happened a couple of years ago with Eric Cantor. I think he was number two at the time. He was defeated as there was a rise of a conservative movement within the Republican Party that they have quickly tamped down, I would add. That's one of the things that really concerns me. You can see a little bit of this rise of the progressives in the Democrat Party, but I don't really see a rise of any movement that is coalescing around President Trump. I don't see a movement that is being nurtured or built out there. This has to be something that is bigger than one man. Is it going to be there forever? Not getting reelected or taken out, or even if he stays there for another 6.5 years, that's it. What do we do at that point? Are we going to have a movement or not? Right? Is there going to be a movement towards supporting liberty? That'd be the best thing. Are we going to have a movement towards supporting our national sovereignty, doing things that put America first? That'd be a great thing. I don't see much in terms of that building. And of course, that isn't going to build if they can shut down preemptively the speech around it. But let's take a look at what's going on with progressives. We keep hearing that there is a big move afoot. It was just last week that everybody was trumpeting the fact that we had a Massachusetts primary where another Democrat congressman who had been there for 20 years, 10 terms, 20-year congressman, Michael Capuano, I think is the way he pronounced his name, lost to challenger Ayanna Pressley. And so everybody was saying, that's it. This is the wave. This is the blue wave we're looking for. This is the progressives on the rise. And, of course, that narrative was picked up by many people. You know, Pressley then went on to blast President Trump. She's black. She blasted him as a racist, a misogynistic, truly empathy bankrupt guy. Yeah, of course, it's the identity politics game here. And, of course, that's what people like Pressley and Ocasio-Cortez have. They have the racist, misogynistic card that they want to play against everybody, including other Democrats. But that hasn't worked too well in most of these. Even though they were quick to jump to her side, The Hill was talking about how Ocasio-Cortez had congratulated her sister in service, and this is now, look at this, we've got two that have won. Except that they've had five that have lost, and the most recent one was yesterday in Delaware. Tom Carper defeats progressive challenger Kerry Harris in the Democratic Senate primary. That happened yesterday. Now, you're not going to see a lot of information about this because that doesn't fit their predetermined narrative that they want you to hear of a blue progressive wave that is coming in November. Now, Ocasio-Cortez, if you go back to the first week of August, she had flown all over the country. As the American Mirror put it, Cortez held a whirlwind tour of the U.S., dumping for Abdul El Sayed for governor of Michigan, for Fairuz Sayed in Michigan's 11th congressional district, for Cori Bush in Missouri's 1st district, went to Hawaii, backed a congressional candidate there. Every single one of them lost. And so they just kind of quietly ignored that. And then she had a win, and everybody trumpeted that. That was the one in Massachusetts with Pressley. And everybody gave her a lot of air for criticizing President Trump and so forth. But, of course, these other people did that. They all lost. And then we have another one of the progressive waves lose yesterday. So they won 2 out of 7. Doesn't exactly look like a wave. Nevertheless, we see Politico. All these people were so good at predicting the last election are now predicting 60 GOP House seats in danger. Let me tell you what is in danger. The election is in danger. Not because they've got a blue wave of support, but because these voting machines can be hacked. We'll talk more about that when we come back. Stay with us.
You found it. It's the real news. From the Infowars.com studios in Austin, Texas, it's your host, David Knight.
Welcome back. I'm David Knight on this Friday, September the 7th, 2018. We have a lot of other news besides censorship. I want to get to some of it. I'm going to get back to the censorship because I want to talk a little bit more about the interesting timing of the Twitter announcement and the simultaneous announcement by CNN and many other news outlets. It's almost like it was coordinated in some ways. Really kind of strange, isn't it? It's kind of like how we existed for years, how I'd had video shut down by Gulag that I'd had up for years and never had a strike on. And then all of a sudden, within a 12-hour period, all these things just disappear. And again, I've now received over 3,000 emails from Gulag. I can't get them to stop. I've reported this as spam because they don't pay any attention to my appeals process. I've never gotten a response to them from the appeal process. Part of my appeal process was to say, would you please tell me specifically what I did that offended you? You know, we were friends for so long. What have I done to offend you? Please tell me, Google. I want to make it up to you. I know exactly what I've done to offend them. I've talked about the Federal Reserve. I've talked about the CIA. I've talked about mainstream media. I've talked about the false flags to set up a Syrian war. I've talked about a lot of things that offend them and their corporate masters and their government masters that they're allied with. I've talked about Google's agenda to set themselves up as one of the premier defense contractors in this autonomous killer robot situation, where they hope to go with that. I mean, they have become truly reprehensible. And I've talked about the fact that they want to set up like they are doing right now in Toronto. Not only are they working hand in glove with the Chinese dictators over there, helping them to establish that tyranny over the Chinese people, they're doing the same thing here. And they're even working in Canada, setting up their template, Sidewalk Labs, that they're setting up on an island there in Toronto. It's going to be an experiment to watch everything that you do in physical space, because it's not enough if you don't get into their cyberspace where they track you constantly. You know, if you have any Google app on any of your phones, it's just going to be constantly tracking you. Even if you tell it, do not track me. Even if you turn off all those services, they'll still do it. They've done it underhandedly. They did it in violation of their user agreements. And then when people complained about it, instead of them stopping it, they just changed their user agreement. We have an updated user agreement. If you want to use this application, just check yes, or you can read 50 pages of legalese and then make your decision on what. Everybody just checks yes. So they just gave them the ability to track you constantly, whether you like it or not. And they're going to do that in physical space, not in just in cyberspace. And they're going to be having you walk a great deal. It's going to be good for your health. Just think of it that way, except for the fact that they're going to have 5G antennas every 50 feet, broadcasting very high frequency, extremely high frequency microwave at your body, at your physical body, that you won't be able to escape anywhere inside the city. That's just, you know, so they can track you everywhere. You are their commoditized product, and you are their lab rat. We're all engaged now in some of the biggest human experiments we've ever seen. One of those experiments, of course, is going to be 5G. They're going to be rolling that out next year. And there's a lot of background research that says this kind of background radiation, the direct radiation that's going to be very close to, is going to have some very negative effects, especially on males. But that's not a problem. We're just going to go ahead and do that anyway. Because Clinton, back in 1996, put in the Telecommunications Act, which said that you don't have the right at any local jurisdiction. The federal government gave themselves the right to shut down any of your health concerns over antenna placements. Back in 1996, the Telecommunications Act. And if you try to slow down any of these people putting up antennas, then they will come after you with a vengeance in the courts because the federal government says so. You can complain because it's an eyesore. You can complain because you think that it's going to take down your property values. But if you're concerned that any antennas have health issues, they're going to shut that down, just like they did your concerns about vaccination. So many people were concerned about vaccination. They had so many people getting injured by the vaccinations that 10 years earlier than that, in 1986, they said, we're not going to allow people to sue the pharmaceutical companies over vaccines. We'll take away your ability to do that. And then 10 years later, they took away your ability to sue them over the antennas. What's the problem? You must be a conspiracy theorist if you're concerned about your health. Oh, no, we're going to take away that. We got a bigger agenda here. You can't have any health concern issues because we've got to get you that data quicker. They're not interested in giving you data quicker. Yeah, it's great. You can download the 5G. You can download an HD movie in a second, supposedly. We'll see. My experience with internet service providers have been that they constantly overpromise on their data bandwidth metrics. But anyway, that's supposedly the goal. They'll eventually get there where you can download a movie in a second. Great. What's that going to cost you in terms of years off of your life when you get that brain cancer? What's that going to cost you? Is it worth it? You're not allowed to even ask. We're not going to do any tests, and the tests that have been done in many, many different countries. As a matter of fact, I'm going to go into that in a great deal of detail. A week from today, I'm going to be giving a keynote address in Branson, Missouri. You can get tickets to that at gen6.com. As a matter of fact, you can get a 10% discount if you use the code ALEX, Alex, at gen6.com. And I'm going to be talking about 5G and how this stuff is coming at us a lot faster than you expected. The conference is going to be on transhumanism and the hybrid age. I'm going to be talking a lot about that as well. But a lot of people don't realize how quickly all these different aspects are coming at us. The first robots that are really going to affect your life are going to be the robot cars, the self-driving cars. And that's another big human experiment that you're engaged in without your knowledge or consent. They're putting these things out on the road, and you may like it and you may not. You and your family may be hit by one of these things. You may not. Who knows? We'll just have to find out, won't we? But we're not going to ask your permission or your consent, just like we don't ask for your permission or consent about vaccines or about antenna clusters that are put very close to elementary schools or other things like that. We've seen cancer clusters arise because of that. So now we're just going to do that same thing with 5G. But let's get to my real concerns about the election. As I said at the top of the hour, we're constantly told that there's a blue wave coming. Told this by the same people who said that Donald Trump had absolutely no chance of winning in the election. It was going to be a slam dunk for Hillary. Absolutely. In the books. You can bank on that. And now they're telling us there's going to be a big blue wave. And they're telling us that there is a progressive wave inside the Democrat Party. I just told you there's another election yesterday in Delaware, Democrat Senate primary, where the progressive candidate was defeated. But that doesn't fit their narrative, so you're not going to hear too much about that. If it is a progressive candidate that defeats a Democrat establishment incumbent like Presley or like Ocasio-Cortez, they'll talk about that a great deal. But they've only won 2 out of 7 contests. A 28% victory rate isn't anything really to brag about. I don't see that as a big wave, but here's my concern. As a Free Thought Project pointed out, voters in the midterm elections in Georgia report watching their ballots mysteriously switch to other candidates. And this is in Savannah, Georgia. You may remember that Georgia was a Georgia State Board of Election. It was one of the two states that was hacked by Obama's Department of Election, Department of Homeland Security, hacking into the state boards of elections. And they tried to pretend that it was foreign people. They tried to use that to say that we're going to declare that the election infrastructure is critical infrastructure, and we're going to take that over at the federal level. You really want to have that happen? That is very concerning, and it is also concerning that they would be hacking into these. But as they point out, Free Thought Project, a rather shocking but not surprising report out this week of Georgia reveals the unsettling state of America's election and voting system. Voters in Georgia are now reporting that after they confirm their votes, they watch on the screen as their ballots mysteriously switch to the opposite candidate. We had the same thing happen here in Texas. And we have a Republican here in Texas. Of course, he used to work at the Rose Law Firm with the Hillary Clinton people in Arkansas. Then he came, they brought him back here. He took a big pay cut to go there. They brought him back here. And every single one of our elections, even though the Texas state constitution says that you have to have backup copies, that they all have to be sequentially numbered, whether it's paper or electronic, he tells them to shut that down each and every time. Nothing going on here, is there? We'll be right back. I'm David Knight. Welcome back. You know what I've talked about? Election corruption abroad. The State Department has a metric that they use to determine whether or not an election is legitimate or not. They take a look at the exit polls You always hear about the exit polls, don't you? We have one organization in the United States that does exit polling for everybody. It's a part of the pool, the journalistic pool, and so everybody subscribes to this one corporation that does nationwide exit polling. But, of course, you never hear anything like candidate A versus candidate B. The exit polls were this, but the actual polls were this. No, they'll always just give you some kind of a subset of that information. They'll break it down by demographic crosstabs. They'll break it down by sex or by race or by political party or by age or something like that. They won't tell you. Total number of votes that we had for A and B were reported as this. But according to our exit polls, it was that. Because the State Department, when they look at foreign results, they do look at the cumulative results of the exit polls. And if they see a difference of more than 4% between the exit polls and the officially reported election results, they say this is a rigged election. They don't want you Americans to see that. ABC, CBS, NBC, Fox News, CNN, MSNBC, none of them report that information to you. They don't want you to see that here in the United States. They don't want you to see if there is a greater difference in the election, in the exit polling versus the officially reported results, because they don't want you to see the corruption here in the election. Every time somebody talks about the Russians hacking the election this last time, they're very quick to come back and say, well, we aren't saying that any votes were actually changed. We don't want you to lose confidence in that election. Oh, boy, that would be a big blow to their ability to rule us, wouldn't it? If we lost our confidence in the integrity of the elections. And yet you should be asking some questions, because anybody who knows anything about computers is questioning the integrity of electronic voting machines. And if you're not questioning the integrity of electronic voting machines, you really don't understand what's going on. There's a lot of ways that elections can be rigged. There's a lot of ways that you can stuff the ballot. You know, the old-fashioned way in Chicago, you catch the guy, they put the election, the voting machine in the back of the van, and they're driving it from here to there or whatever, or they intercept it and they change it as the votes are in transit, or they fudge it at the central location. And we saw some of that stuff actually being done. It was actually caught by people. Ron Paul supporters said, wait a minute, look at the way we had these results we were watching here at the local precinct. And then when they get reported to the state, look at how they changed those votes. Did that over and over again. There were a lot of instances of that happening. So yeah, there's old-fashioned corruption that can be done with humans, with telephones, with papers, with old mechanical electronic voting machines. You can rig the election by having people show up who don't have any photo ID. We see that happening in North Carolina frequently. As I said, many times I've told the story, 2012 election, my brother-in-law had a friend who went to vote in North Carolina. And of course, in North Carolina, you can vote early and vote often. Or actually not vote often. Actually, somebody else can vote for you, which is what happened to this friend of my brother-in-law's. He goes to show up on election day. And since North Carolina has the longest extended voting period, thank you, Democrats, of any state in the union, he goes to show up on that day, gives them his name and address, which, of course, anybody with a phone book, remember those things? They don't have phone books anymore, but it's even easier to find out people's names and addresses and go down and vote for them now. Anyway, they went down and gave a name and address, and they look it up in their paper printout, and they said, you've already voted. No, I haven't. Oh, yes, you have, and this other person at your house has as well, and that was his deceased mother who had been dead for a couple of years. So some Democrat had gone down there and voted for them. Or maybe a corrupt Republican, who knows? It doesn't have to necessarily be one particular party over the other. But they don't have any picture ID in North Carolina, because that would be racist, you know. You can't ask for any picture ID except with everything else in life. You cash a check at the grocery store, you get on a plane, you get pulled over by the police, show me your picture ID. But not for voting. We don't want to go there for voting. And so that's another way that you can rig it. Or you can just go in like they do in California and say, we don't care. Just come in and vote as many times as you want. You can be a foreign citizen. We don't care. You can come in and tell us how much you want us to spend on your free education. We invite you to do that in San Francisco. So there's a lot of ways that you can rig this. But I think the one that we need to be the most concerned about, because it allows them to do the same types of things that we see on social media. You know, it's not just the big people like Alex Jones that are being censored on social media. This is why you should all be concerned. They're censoring you as well. And they can go down. We've seen this happen to a lot of individuals. A lot of people who aren't famous or don't have a big platform, aren't well known, they're still shut down if they voice an opinion that Twitter doesn't like, that Facebook doesn't like, that Google doesn't like. They will shut you down, and they've done it over and over again. And we can't report everybody that they do it to because, as we started the broadcast, over 600,000 people. And they brag about that, how they go through with an algorithm, identify people. We're talking about God, guns, or America. And we shut those people down. And that's what they're going to do with voting. With voting, the kind of manipulation of elections and vote totals that they can do, that can go down to every election in every jurisdiction, especially if we make it all electronic and we put the federal government in charge of it because it's critical infrastructure. Because, you know, those Russians might get in and hack things. There's a lot of ways to hack an election. And what you're seeing right now with the censorship of InfoWars and Alex Jones and other conservatives and libertarians is a hacking of the election. They want to tell us that a tiny, tiny fraction of 1% of money that was spent on ads that is allegedly, hasn't been proven, but allegedly spent by Russian interests on Facebook, $100,000 out of billions of dollars spent on the presidential election, that that's somehow through the election. What do you think the silencing of over 600,000 accounts just on one social media site alone would do? Way, way, way bigger than that. But then there's also the electronic issue. As I said, if you can go in and change the vote totals, and if you can do that in every jurisdiction, in every race, going all the way from president down to dog catcher, it'd be very, very easy for them to do it with an enterprise-wide solution, as they like to say. You know, when you make the election system electronic, then it is extendable corruption. And so what's going on in Georgia, as I started to say, as pointed out by the television station in Savannah, Georgia, reported by Freethought Project, Secretary of State Brian Kemp there in South Carolina and Georgia is facing a federal lawsuit because he's reluctant to make the change before the upcoming November the 6th election. Kemp says he doesn't agree with the system needs updating, and he's fighting to delay it. And he's citing confusion and cost. One representative there, a Republican, said, "I don't think there's any question we need to spend a little bit of extra to make sure that we have safe and secure elections." A Democrat candidate, Lisa Ring, told WSAV that she's had voters tell her that they've watched their vote change right in front of their eyes. "We've heard reports all over the state of these old machines often not taking a person's vote. It'll change. It'll change the vote." During the 2016 election, of course, it was the same Secretary of State, Brian Kemp, who wrote a letter to then DHS Secretary Jay Johnson, asking him if he was aware that DHS had attempted to hack into the Georgia state election system. And, of course, they attempted to take it over in terms of authority as well. We're going to talk a little bit more about other ways they're going to hack this election. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Not sorry when snowflakes can't handle the truth. It's your host, David Knight.
Try to make some sense of it all, but I can see it makes no sense at all.
Welcome back. I'm David Knight as we're talking about the danger of these electronic voting systems. And anybody that knows anything about it says we've got to stop it. Here's a quote as we're talking about this situation here in Georgia. We've had the same situation here in Texas. People saying, "Hey, look, I voted and I watched this thing switch it." Now, the most dangerous thing is what we have seen demonstrated over and over again on television. Now, that is somebody going in with a voting machine, inserting a thumb drive, which then put in a program that would switch all the votes from one candidate to the other. And then after the vote totals were reported, would erase itself. It was trivial. You see this being done all the time by people who are not experts in computer science. They're merely professors at a junior college somewhere with some undergraduate students, and they go in and give a demonstration on local television, and they do it every single election. And yet we continue this push to go to electronic voting machines. Why is that? Well, you know why it is. Because the government wants it. The government wants to have the ability to control the votes and to change the votes, just as they want to have this censorship on social media. They might pretend that they don't want it. They might pretend that they're going to do it or that it isn't happening or whatever, but they are the ones who are ultimately behind this, pushing it, continually pushing it. And when we look at a situation where they take down 1.5 billion Facebook page views since 2016 election. This is a story from the Gateway Pundit. Top conservative publishers speak out. We lost 1.5 billion Facebook page views since 2016. This is from Floyd Brown. He has, in 2008, they launched Western Journal. By 2016, they had more than 1 billion page views. But since 2016, their organization has lost 75% of its Facebook traffic. Now, InfoWars is even bigger. And they can take them down, do it quietly. They can take InfoWars down, one of the best-known conservative or libertarian sites. They can do that and do it in the open. And you have probably half of the people in the country are applauding that. And nobody is doing anything about it. Because we've got a lot of people out there that you think, even if this was breaking down along partisan lines, you would think that Marco Rubio and the Republicans would want to do something about that. But they don't. They will take the hit in this election if need be. And many of them, like Rubio, would love to see this election turn so they could get Trump impeached, take him out, and they could then take back the government as the loyal opposition, which they aren't. So, you know, we look at this type of thing happening. You had one professor from Princeton University, a computer science professor. He has studied election security, and he was there with a grad student. And it took him just 7 minutes to break into the Sequoia electronic voting machine that they bought online. But it's still used in Louisiana, Pennsylvania, New Jersey, Virginia, other places like that. We've just had the Black Hat and DEF CON conventions. These are hacker conventions that happen in Las Vegas every year in August. And you had people there of all political persuasions, but people who understood the danger of this, demonstrating how easy it was to break into the, not only the voting machines, but to break into the replicas of the state boards of election. And they had some kids do it, kids from the ages of 5 to 16. It was an 11-year-old girl who did it the quickest. But out of, I think it was 39 students, they had 35 of them able to hack into those state boards of election. Kids can do it. That's the whole point that they were trying to make at the Black Hat and DEF CON conventions. They were saying, it's so simple, a child can do this. Why are we openly and knowingly exposing our elections to this kind of tampering? And like I said, there's a lot of different ways that we can do that. You should be very, very concerned about what is happening. You know, we're going to get back to this censorship of InfoWars and Alex Jones, the Twitter censorship that CNN and Oliver Darcy pushed for so long and were able to get yesterday. But there's another side of this. There's another side to this censorship. Besides the capability that they now have to rig the elections on a scale that is unprecedented, there's also the idea that they want to, when they censor your ability to participate in speech, which is what they're doing on social media, they don't want you, as I've said, there's certain things that they don't, you know, evil things that they don't want you to see, evil things that they don't want you to hear, that would question the official narratives on certain issues or the official story. And so they don't want you to see or hear those things, but they also don't want you to be able to speak any evil yourself. So if you have an opinion and if you disagree with something, they don't want to hear that. If you agree with something, they don't want to hear that either. And so besides just hiding and gagging what you see and hear and what you can say, they, on the other hand, want to know everything about you, everything about you. So keep you totally in the dark, silence you completely, but then put you under a microscope. And a good example of this is a story from The Intercept. IBM is using New York Police Department surveillance footage to develop technology that lets police search by skin color. Now, this is something that really freaks out the left, because now we're looking at skin color. This seems to be the one thing that everybody cares about more than anything else. And, you know, when you look at an individual, right, you can identify them. If you've got biometrics, you can identify them by any facial feature. You can identify them by their eyes. You can identify them by their hair, even by their hair color. You can identify them by the way that they walk. But if you identify them by their skin color, now there's people freaking out about that, freaking out about it. Look at this. We've done racial profiling. Let's get over this and see the bigger issue in here. But I think there is a bigger issue in this. You know, first thing when I saw this, I thought, wow, searching by skin color. And at first I thought about it from an engineering standpoint. I thought, well, that's going to present a little bit of a problem. But of course, this is going to be a fixed surveillance camera. So you're going to have some reference points here. So you can adjust for variations in ambient light that's always changing ambient light. So you can adjust for that by your reference point that you got there because you got a fixed camera. So that, yeah, it's not too bad. That's not too difficult. But then I thought, what am I thinking about? I mean, this is the way that engineers will approach something. Oh, this is a problem. We can solve this. And they say, how can I solve that? Oh, I got it solved. Hey, look at this. I fixed it. And not think about the consequences of this. Engineers need to be thinking about the consequences of what they are doing for the deep state, for the military industrial complex, or for the police state industrial complex. Do you really want to make that better bomb? Do you really want to make that better AI that's going to be able to identify everybody because they may be using that against you someday? Do you really want to do that? You might better start looking at this from a libertarian standpoint, instead of just from an engineering standpoint. But this is something now that the left finally cares about. As the Internet Intercept is saying, video analytics software captures stills of individuals on closed-circuit television, automatically labels the images with physical tabs, things like the color of their clothes. It allows people to quickly search through hours of video and images for individuals that match a description of interest. But if you can also say, hey, we saw a guy that was wearing a certain color jacket or something, and he was in a certain area. Okay, fine, we'll do that. But then if you can do that, you can identify all these other things about the person. You know, it's not just alerts if they have an unattended package, as I point out, or a car that is going too fast and speeding up a street, or people getting into a restricted area. No, thanks to confidential corporate documents and interviews with technologists, they found that IBM is working with this, working with the New York Police Department. Because, you know, it was IBM that was working with the Nazis on the Hollerith codes. It was so old school to have to tattoo people in the prison camps, put those barcodes on their arms or whatever to identify them. Now we can just do it in a non-obtrusive way. Thank you, IBM. It's great to see that you are advancing technology for good purposes out there. And so now they're working secretly with the New York Police Department. That's now been exposed. They've been doing this as early as 2012, they say, of course, it's been going a lot longer than that. IBM was creating new search features that allowed police departments to search camera footage for images of people by hair color, facial color, or, heaven forbid, skin tone. We'll be right back. Stay with us. That's right. No matter where you go, they're going to find you, even by your skin color. Freak out about that, liberals. I mean, I'm freaked out about the fact that we have surveillance cameras everywhere and databases everywhere. And that all these different jurisdictions of law enforcement, from local police departments all the way up to the federal government, are working on how they can identify everybody on every kind of biometric parameter that you can identify. But now, it's skin color. Well, let's all freak out about the skin color thing. Let's get the big picture here, folks. There's an elephant in the room, and that elephant is watching everything that we do, identifying every single one of us, watching our behavior online. That's what all the social media was designed to do. Again, let's understand that all these companies, whether it is Zuckerberg put in business by these venture capitalists who have DARPA and CIA people on their venture capital boards, or just the CIA venture capital firm itself, InQtel, that was created in the late 1990s in order to specifically do this. They're doing this everywhere. Why? Because they got a lot of criticism for their total information awareness program. Everybody said, that's kind of creepy. I don't want the government doing that. Okay, well, we'll do it with a private company. Is that okay? And everybody, including the libertarians who want to be out there at the forefront, say, oh, private corporation? Oh, okay, that's good. I like private corporations. That's fine. They can do anything they want. And then the government can scrape all that information, or they can demand that it be turned over to them. That's one of the fights that was going on with Aaron Swartz leading the fight to stop CISPA, SOPA, ACTA, PIPA, all these different variations that were being done in North America and in Europe to remove the liability that these corporations have for turning this information over to the government, for violating your privacy, or for violating their user agreements, as Google has, we've just seen that they are doing that, tracking you constantly, even though they say they won't track you. And then when they get caught, they just change the terms of service. But all these different things, they tried several times to get CISPA through. All these other things were all set up to protect these corporations from any liability if they worked with the government in this public-private partnership of corporate fascism, part of this surveillance state. And so that's what social media is about. It's about watching everything that you do, watching your conversation, just like the Chinese are doing. And little Marco Rubio is browbeating Jack Dorsey and Sheryl Sandberg from Facebook, saying, you're going to do this for us, right? And you're going to work for us and not the Chinese government, right? Yeah, good luck with that, Rubio. These people will do anything in the long term. They're going to tell you whatever. They'll do this. They'll shut down InfoWars and the conservatives for you right now, all the Trump supporters, so that you can rig the election. But they're setting up something that is very, very dangerous here, and we should understand just how bad this is. But again, they're talking about now skin color. That's the big issue, because it's now skin color. They are monitoring everything that you do. And it's not just the venture capital firms and the creation of all these different front companies for the CIA and the NSA. It was done in the late 1990s. That's when they started funding Facebook and these other ones. But it's also the fact that at the very same time, the fastest growing part of the intelligence service, the part that James Clapper hung out with and was featured speaker at all their annual events, big events, thousands of people showing up for these geospatial intelligence conferences, mapping where you are, mapping your political beliefs, mapping your religious beliefs, mapping your ethnic identity, even your skin color. Yes, even your skin color. How about that? And your eye color and your hair color and the way that you walk and the shape of your nose and your mouth and your eyes, all of that in their database. And then combining all of that, identifying you, tracking you everywhere you go, and tracking your every thought. And putting on a map where they have the problems with people that don't believe their narrative or that don't want to go their way in politics. They have referred to it as mastering the human domain. A branch of their geospatial intelligence is human domain analytics. And, of course, it's all about activity-based intelligence, ABI. This is a high-tech tyranny that is being imposed on us. That's why William Binney, in one of my several of my many interviews with William Binney, said this is far worse than anything that the East German Stasi were ever able to do. They could imagine it. They could wish that they could do it, but they had to rely on human snitches. Well, now they've got big corporate snitches, and they have applied artificial intelligence to help them. Not a generalized artificial intelligence. I mean, this is not Skynet. It's maybe something even worse than that, because this is being run by people with evil human natures. And so, as you're worried about this, we get the same kind of articles coming out just this week from The Hill. Tech is mobilizing to boost election security. So don't worry about this. All of these Quislings that are working to censor conservatives and libertarians on the social media sites and on the internet and on the search engines, as Google is doing, don't worry. They're going to be there along with the people like IBM that are working hand in glove with the New York Police Department to put up biometric databases to surveil you like your Chinese citizens. They're going to be there to protect the integrity of the elections from being hacked. And Microsoft is out there. As The Hill says, without any sense of irony, Microsoft is the most prominent name, unveiling a free cybersecurity program in August after the company revealed that it had detected Russian hackers. Okay, that tells you all that you need to know. Microsoft, by the way, the people who wanted to shut down Gab, said, you're either going to, Gab sets themselves up, and so we're going to be a free speech site, and we're not going to censor people. And so Microsoft comes in and says, we have these two individuals out here that if you don't take them down, we're going to de-host you. And that same Microsoft is going to be out there to boost election security, according to The Hill. Don't worry. They will protect the elections. They just didn't say who they're going to protect the elections for, right? It's not going to be protecting election integrity. It's going to be protecting it for one side or the other. And when we look at all this stuff and we talk about the fact that, yeah, 1.5 billion views, you know, 1 billion from this group, another 500 million from this group in just 1 year, gone from Facebook. Well, you know, how about if they shut down traffic by 93%? Of course, I saw this with my program on Google. We were getting 250,000 views on a lot of videos right after the show started. And then they start throttling it down big time, big time. And then they did it again once we started picking up. And so by the time that they completely took me off of Gulag, I was getting fewer views with nearly 60,000 subscribers than I was getting when I had 3,000 subscribers because they were throttling it down. And so when you say, oh, you've lost 93% of Facebook traffic from these top conservative websites, this is a story from Gateway Pundit. How about when they do it to InfoWars and you take 100% out? And they do it not covertly. See, this is why they had these hearings. You can talk about analytics and you can say, well, you know, we did this comparison here and you can see this and this. And so people are going to argue about that data, and the morons in a hurry. And that's a legal term coming out of the UK. Morons in a hurry. I saw that yesterday. And I thought, oh, that's beautiful. It was George Galway that used it, but it actually goes back to a court case in the UK. I imagine it's pretty familiar to people in the UK, but not here in the US. But I think it's perfect. Morons in a hurry. Morons in a hurry aren't going to listen to website analytics. That's just going to glaze over them. And somebody else can come out with a different set of analytics, and that's just going to glaze over them as well. No, that's why they want to have these hearings. And that's why they want to do this stuff in the open. If they really wanted to shut this thing down, as I said before, they would have had testimony from Alex Jones instead of having him out in the hall screaming at Oliver Darcy for Darcy. I keep getting those two confused because they kind of are mirror images of each other, right? The Darcy conspiracy to shut down InfoWars. Instead of him attacking this guy who had attacked us, and constantly lobbied Twitter and written articles saying how InfoWars should be shut down. And when Alex Jones confronts him on that, oh, Alex Jones is being hateful. I think Oliver Darcy is being hateful and CNN are being hateful for trying to shut down freedom of the press. All right, we've got to go to a break here. And I just want to tell you real quickly, go to InfoWarsStore.com. Support us if you want to have a free press. If you want to keep this program going, we have a special just for our audience. You can get Wake Up America coffee. It is 100% Arabica bean blend, and we have it in a couple of different blends. We have the original as well as an immune support, which has some mushrooms added in there for your to boost your immune system. You can get that 20% off with the code REALNEWS at InfoWarsStore.com. We've also got some big discounts on bone broth. That's 50% off. We have our bodies, our turmeric formula. That is also 50% off. Take a look at the specials that we have at InfoWarsStore.com. It's a way to support your health and your family's health, and to support free speech that is very much under attack. We are the tip of the spear here. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
And now, covering the ongoing fight for the heart and soul of America, broadcasting from deep in the heart of Texas, it's David Knight.
Welcome back. I'm David Knight. I was just talking about the concern that we should all have in terms of the manipulation of this election and the many different ways they can be manipulated. Of course, one of those is with electronic voting machines. The other way, another way that they can do it is with the manipulation of social media. What you see, what you hear, what you're able to say, your speech, passing on things that you agree with or that you disagree with. But I've got another example of this here and how this is rolling out in terms of the surveillance state. Get the clip of Michael Hayden ready, because I've played this many times. Michael Hayden, former director of the NSA, former director of the CIA, and he was saying at a speech that he was giving to some law students at Washington and Lee Law School, that what the real concern of the government is. It's not about keeping you safe. Here's what Michael Hayden had to say.
Not about guilt. In fact, let me be really clear, okay? NSA doesn't just listen to bad people. NSA listens to interesting people. People.
Yeah, yuck, yuck, yuck. Isn't that interesting? Yeah, interesting people. You know, people like President Trump, people like you. Because although you may not be famous, your voice matters. That's why they have to control social media. They want to know what the collective consciousness of a population is thinking. It's not enough just to have a broadcast media that is working in collusion with the government, with the military-industrial complex, with the CIA. It's not enough just to have them put out a narrative and a story. They want to know if you sincerely believe that story. And part of the ways of, so they want that kind of control feedback, and they want to be able to continually reinforce that information to you. But they want to take a look at everything that you're doing and everything in your life. Here's the latest example of this. Coming out of Australia, this is reported by the New York Times, Australia wants to take the government surveillance to the next level. As the Times is saying, a state's capacity to spy on its citizens has obviously grown exponentially in recent years, but at the same time, the intelligence agencies have been frustrated by encryption. You're always going to have this back and forth, measures, countermeasures, and so forth. And so they're frustrated because of encryption. Now, as William Binney has said, there is no foolproof encryption. If they want to get to somebody specifically, they will dedicate the resources and they can already do it. They can spend enough time on an individual to get it. But they want to be able to get to everybody all the time. And so what they have in Australia is a situation where, of course, Australia is one of the Five Eyes countries. Five Eyes. Think about that. Each of these countries, one eye. The United States is one of those eyes. Britain is another, Australia is another, Canada is another, and New Zealand is another. Now, Australia is an interesting place for them to go because, like China, Australia has no Bill of Rights. So they can go there and they can test these things out. And what they have done in the USA, of course, is, as I said before, Aaron Swartz fought this very hard. He was able to defeat it multiple times. They passed it after he died. He died because they either harassed him to death, if you believe that narrative, or because they killed him in jail. But he was a very determined person. He was fighting this. As they got that passed, as they took away corporate liability for corporate snitches in America with CISA, and it's people like the Republican Richard Burr out of North Carolina that supported that. As they took away corporate liability for snitching on you, now Australia wants to mandate that snitching. They want to pass a law requiring everybody to snitch on you. See, this is far worse, as William Binney said, far worse than anything the East German Snazi, that's what you call them, Stasi Nazis, Snazis. Far worse than anything they ever did. And I'll give you the details on that when we come back. Stay with us. David Knight on this Friday, September the 7th, 2018. We're just talking about the newest attempt to give a legal framework for a total surveillance state. As I said, we have, thanks to the repeated efforts of people like Richard Burr, removed any liability for corporations to be snitches. They passed that over the dead body of Aaron Swartz, who very effectively and tirelessly and courageously fought that. I don't believe that these trumped up charges that they brought against him caused him to commit suicide. I think he was killed But I'm just a conspiracy theorist. What do I know? I may be crazy, right? Nevertheless, once they got rid of him, they were able to get rid of any legal obstacles, any objections that these corporations would have to becoming corporate fascist partners in terms of surveilling on you. They took away their legal liability that you would be able to sue them. That was what CISA did. It had CISPA many times. And that P was about protection. Who was being protected? Not you, the corporations. They took the P out. They finally got it passed. But they put that out in many different formats, both here and in Europe. Now, after they've laid the foundation where they have removed the corporate liability, so the corporations can't be punished for being corporate snitches, now the next step is to force them to be corporate snitches for the government. And they're beginning with this in Australia. And again, Australia is one of five English-speaking countries that all work together. They call them the Five Eyes. It's U.S., Australia, New Zealand, Canada, Britain, all working together. They put out a joint communique in a recent meeting in June. This was more recent than the June meeting that they had in 2017, saying they're going to get rid of encryption because it can undermine public safety efforts. And as I point out for you at the top of the hour, Michael Hayden, who was former head of the NSA, the CIA, said, we're not interested in bad people. We're interested in interesting people. They're not interested, folks, in protecting you. They're not interested in public safety. They're interested in interesting people. And you are going to be one of their interesting people. We've seen this over and over again. As a matter of fact, we've got a book coming out now. We've got September 11th coming up on Tuesday. New book. Talking to additional FBI agents, talking about how, as we had many people say, they were shut down inside the FBI when they noticed things. Well, now a lot of people are going on record with that. Talking about, yeah, we were noticing there was some unusual traffic here with these Saudi people and so forth. And got shut down by the CIA. So they're not there to protect you. But now what they're going to do, and they're starting in Australia because there is no Bill of Rights. They want to set up a situation where they can mandate that corporations have to snitch on people. It's a new strategy to collect intelligence that can be adopted everywhere else. And quite frankly, folks, since these five countries are working together, if they can force companies that are participating on the World Wide Web to set up structures to report on you all the time, they can just have all those reports originate in Australia. No problem. They don't even need to pass the law here. Proposed law would create a process for designated communication providers, defined so expansively, says the New York Times, that it covers any business that is hosting a website. So any business that's on the web would have to assist intelligence and law enforcement agencies to do almost anything, to give them access to anything, especially encrypted communications. Providers may have to build tools. They may have to install software. They may have to keep agencies up to date with developments. You know, this is one of the reasons why a lot of people have said there have been no productivity increases, really, no net productivity increases, as we have seen the automation of the paperless society and computers and so forth, because, you know, we don't have support staff that do it. We have to do all that email and all of that secretarial work. We do that now ourselves. But even if you are a small business, just like this type of thing, you have to now provide all kinds of reports to the federal government that they would never have been able to make you comply with before. Now you've got to go out and buy the software. In order to be in business, you have to provide all these detailed reports to them. So any increases in productivity are very quickly taken up with the government putting mandates on you in terms of the kind of reports that you have to file. But this is just another example of how they are extending this, as we have the head of British Science Association saying that AI is a greater concern than terrorism. And then saying, if Russian cyber hackers were able to meddle with the 2016 U.S. elections, well, they didn't. William Binney said they didn't. I believe William Binney. I don't believe these lying people out of the deep state bureaucracies. He was a whistleblower who exposed them. And he did a technical analysis along with some other people and said, this didn't happen. This was handed over. Anyway, but if we're going to be concerned about that, they said, what is stopping cyber terrorists from hacking into any future AI-controlled power grids or transportation systems or banks or military installations? Good point. Because if they remove encryption, the point that the New York Times is making is that if they remove encryption, not only are we exposed to terrorists or bad foreign state actors, but we're also exposed to a lot of criminals. We've seen this, haven't we? Don't you remember all the different hacking events that we've had? We've had the Federal Reserve hacked. We have had the Pentagon hacked. All these personnel files of all the people who work for the Pentagon. We've had the CIA hacked. They hacked the tools of the CIA and the NSA. And they put them out on the internet. So we know that they can look like anybody. We know exactly how the Vault 7 leaks that went out. We know exactly what they can do to make themselves look like they're a foreign state actor or whatever. But in this particular example, the New York Times is talking about when they're concerned, they said, look at what's going to happen to us if we lose this encryption, right? Look at what happened to Britain's National Health Service last year when you had the WannaCry that got out. It was ransomware. Why did that happen? Well, it was because there was a vulnerability in Microsoft software. Now, the NSA knew about that. The NSA didn't tell them about that because the NSA wanted to exploit that. But the NSA itself was hacked. And as they point out, the problem about the that knew about the vulnerability was apparently stolen from the NSA. So they find out that there's a vulnerability. And they themselves have vulnerabilities. And so anything that they do in terms of breaking in and getting all of your data, that can be taken by criminal actors. And all these things that we're seeing, these hacks into state boards of elections, in most cases, they seem to be trying to get information from people, not for even for voting purposes, except for the hacks that were done by the Department of Homeland Security, but they seem to be done by hackers who are trying to make money off of identity theft. And that's another thing that we've seen. Remember, we had Experian's website hacked last year. We had 143 million Americans had all of their financial details stolen out on the dark web now. See, these are the people who are not interested in bad people. They're interested in you. And when they put this kind of stuff out there, when they open up these exploits, this is the way it's going to be exploited by these different individuals. And so when we take away encryption, you're taking away all of your protection. And these are people who not only are not going to protect you, the NSA, the CIA, the FBI, the Department of Defense, they're not going to protect you because they can't protect themselves, certainly not from cyber hackers. Every single one of them has been hacked by the cyber hackers. And so it isn't artificial intelligence that we've got to be concerned about. It's our government taking down all of our defenses, taking all the locks off of our doors. And as we look at where this is headed in the future, just understand that it is the Republicans as much as anybody else that are fighting to keep these doors open, like Marco Rubio, like Condoleezza Rice, who is going around running China town halls, doing PR for the Chinese government. And the high-tech companies in Silicon Valley are getting very concerned about where some of this future money is going to come from, because now a lot of these people in Washington are saying, we're going to start cutting down on the Chinese government coming in and giving you money to run their surveillance state, because we want to be the people who run it alone here in the United States. That's essentially what Marco Rubio was saying. So now Zero Hedge is reporting high-tech horrors. China's cash pipeline to Silicon Valley is starting to get clogged by people like Marco Rubio who want a hegemony on that information. Welcome back. Of course, one of the big stories yesterday, and we're going to get back and talk about what happened with Alex Jones and Twitter, the collusion apparently between Twitter and many mainstream media organizations that were notified in advance what was going to happen so they could all put out the press release at exactly the same time. Isn't that convenient? And the fact that Jack Dorsey and Twitter are giving a lot of money to the Atlantic Council. If you haven't heard me talk about that, I'm going to give that to you again in just a moment. We talked about that a lot in the first hour. We're going to get back to that and talk about the collusion between media, between the government, between the big social media corporations that are not social. As I said before, Facebook and Twitter are not social. Google is not a search engine. These are instruments of social control. and the Republicans and the Democrats and the military-industrial complex are all working together on this. But let's take a little bit of a detour here for a moment. And let's talk about what happened the last couple of days. You know, we had this op-ed piece that came out attacking President Trump, supposedly from a senior official in the White House. Question is, who is it? President Trump had this to say. He's calling on the New York Times to burn their source. Good luck with that. But here's what President Trump had to say.
The latest act of resistance is the op-ed published in the failing New York Times by an anonymous, gutless coward. You just look. He was, nobody knows who the hell he is, or she, although they put he, but probably that's a little disguise. That means it's she. But for the sake of
Nikki Haley,
our national security, the New York Times should publish his name at once. I think their reporters should go and investigate who it is. That would actually be a good scoop. That would be a good scoop. Unelected deep state operatives who defy the voters to push their own secret agendas are truly a threat to democracy itself. And I was so heartened when I looked. I think it's backfired. Seriously, people that don't exactly dig us and they don't exactly like me, they're fighting for us. It's an incredible, it's actually a beautiful thing. We've picked up a lot of support because at some point this whole thing is going to be exposed. And it's really bad and it's really dangerous and it's really sad for the media and the mainstream media. It really is sad.
And again, I think who he's referring to there was Glenn Greenwald of The Intercept. He said they want to say that President Trump is undemocratic. And he said the big beef that they have with him, if you look at this, is the policy. And it is a neocon policy, traditional Republican policies, which he said President Trump did not run on. He didn't campaign on that. He was not elected on that. It is not undemocratic. He said what is undemocratic is to have this unelected cabal, because this individual says, I'm not the only one. There's a lot of us here who are thwarting everything that President Trump does secretly. And so that's who I think he was talking about, because Glenn Greenwald is not a Trump supporter by any means, but he doesn't like to see an unelected cabal taking over the U.S. government that is concentrated with the military-industrial complex and the deep surveillance state. Now, Rand Paul has another idea. Rand Paul says that Trump should use a lie detector test to find the anonymous op-ed author. Well, that might be kind of interesting. My wife used to work as a personnel manager, a district personnel manager, and they would do lie detector tests. And she doesn't really agree with it. It does have a certain ability to ferret out some individuals who have a guilt complex. You know, it puts pressure on them. I don't know if the lie detector itself works, but I think that it is a psychological tool to make people feel guilty about things. Certainly, though, when you're talking about people in Washington, D.C., when you're talking about politicians and we're talking about people that work with the CIA or the press or whatever, these people are notoriously good liars. And they have consciences that are seared with a hot iron. I don't know that you're going to get them to squirm. I don't think Bill and Hillary, I don't think their blood pressure goes up or their heartbeat goes up when they tell a lie. Do you? I think they're pathological liars. If anything, if it changes, if any of those biometrics change, is simply because they get excited when they tell a lie. Oh, I like it when I lie. That's I enjoy that even more. Anyway, Rand Paul said yesterday, President Trump should use lie detector tests to find out which senior administration officials authorized an anonymous op-ed piece in the New York Times. He said it's not unprecedented for people with security clearances to be asked whether or not they're revealing things against the law under oath, and also to be asked that in a lie detector test. He said we use a lie detector test routinely for CIA agents and for FBI agents. If you have a security clearance at the White House, I think it would be acceptable to use a lie detector test and ask people whether or not they're talking to the media against the policy of the White House. And as the Washington Examiner points out, this is not the first time that Rand Paul has suggested that. He suggested it back in March of 2017 when you had the undermining of Michael Flynn. He said at that time, it's very, very important that whoever released that should go to jail, because you can't have members of the Intelligence Committee community rather, listening to the most private and highly classified information and then releasing it to the New York Times. Well, again, I think Rand Paul is spot on. I think it'd be a good thing to do whether or not the lie detector works. Maybe it does. Maybe it does. That hasn't really been my opinion. But, you know, when we look at this, we have Mike Pence and his team have come out. I talked a good deal about this yesterday, who I think is behind this, the likely suspect. Team Mike Pence, says Breitbart, denies authorship of the anonymous deep state op-ed. The vice president puts his name on his op-eds, said his communications director. And, of course, the reason why people are focusing on Mike Pence is because of the unusual use of the term lodestar, which Mike Pence has used in speeches multiple times, but nobody else really uses. Certainly nobody else in the White House sphere. But as they looked at this, a lot of people said maybe that was done as a false flag. And other leakers have said, I will intentionally listen to speech habits of individuals, and I will put some of the things that are unique to them that are idiosyncratic. I'll put that into something if I leak it so that it just takes attention away from me. And I think that is the most likely scenario. You know, as I said at the time, I don't think, you know, I know that Vice President Pence is a bit of a neocon when it comes to foreign policy and this other kind of stuff, but I don't think he's Machiavellian. And I think that if it was to be found, even if he wanted to undermine the president, even if he disagreed vehemently with the president and tried to block him on policy issues, I don't think he would take this approach and go to the New York Times and do an anonymous op-ed piece. I don't think it's Mike Pence. And I think it'd be really stupid if it was any of the people that were part of his inner circle, because if this was found out to be Pence or anybody on his team, it would be the end of his political career. If people saw him not just as a neocon conservative, but if they saw him as some kind of a Machiavellian manipulator behind the scenes, that would go against every public image of Mike Pence that anybody has seen. But there is somebody that is a senior official in the Trump administration, somebody who is and has been proven over and over again to be a Machiavellian liar. Somebody who had an issue with all of these things that were specifically put out there. Somebody who would be proud to be seen as a John McCain. We'll be right back. I'll tell you who that is.
And now, live and uncensored, broadcasting from the great state of Texas, worldwide, it's David Knight.
Welcome back. As part of that op-ed piece, the anonymous op-ed piece that was in the New York Times, a lot of speculation about whether or not Vice President Pence would be behind that because of the curious use of the word lodestar. And in a tweet, his communications director, Jared Egan, I think is the way he pronounced his name, said the vice president puts his name on his op-eds. The New York Times should be ashamed, and so should the person who wrote the false, illogical, and gutless op-ed. Our office is above such amateur acts. But there's somebody, I think, in the Trump sphere who is definitely not above that. Somebody who does false flags, because that's what this would be. And as a matter of fact, one individual who was still anonymous that was talking to them said, I would deliberately put stuff out there that will indicate that it's coming from somebody else and it's really coming from me, right? They did this little false flag when they leak stuff out there. And I think that was the case because, as I said before, it's not the public persona of Vice President Pence that he would be this Machiavellian backstabber. But there is somebody that would be a backstabber, somebody who is proud of McCain. The person who wrote this is very, very proud of McCain, John McCain. And one of the hallmarks of McCainery is backstabbing. Last week I had Ben Garrison, the political cartoonist, on, and he laid out the history of John McCain and how it was really a history of backstabbing everybody in his personal life and his political life, backstabbing the POWs and the MIAs who were left behind in Vietnam, backstabbing people who were serving with him in the military, backstabbing the GOP voters, backstabbing his wife. And there is somebody who likes to do that sort of thing, who loves John McCain, who thinks that he is the essence of what America is about. Somebody that would be proud to be exposed to that. I mean, it would be the end of Pence's career if he was seen to be this kind of a backstabber. But also somebody who likes to have false flags, throwing things like Lodestar in there. Somebody who is a Machiavellian liar, somebody who is passionate about gaslighting the public on things like false gas attacks in Syria or false gas attacks in the UK. You know, somebody like Nikki Haley, somebody well acquainted with Vice President Pence, somebody who, as they wrote in that op-ed piece, very upset about the fact that President Trump was so reluctant to be put into a box to escalate issues with Russia and to do something on the basis of this gaslighting false flag attack in the UK and another one in Syria, as Nikki Haley was pushing it relentlessly. I said it sounded exactly like her, except for the Lodestar. It's the same type of thing that she would do. And so we got a couple of articles that have come out, one from Free Thought Project, another one from Russia Insider. Oh, Russia Insider. Well, you know what? When they talk about what is being pursued by the psychic Nikki Haley, that's great. They got a picture of her wearing a Karnak the Magnificent headdress. You know, Johnny Carson used to do that. I have right here in this envelope the identity of the person who is about to release a gas attack in Syria. I know who this is going to be, and we're going to punish them right away. And as they point out, we've seen this over and over again, and now they jump to a conclusion, immediately punish somebody, say, we know who did it, and take action without any investigation. We've seen that happen over and over again. Now they're saying there hasn't even been an attack, but I know who the person who's going to do the attack is. That should make us very suspicious, shouldn't it? As Free Thought Project says, the U.S. envoy says to the U.N., that's Nikki Haley, she says she knows exactly who is behind the gas attack in Syria. Before it happens. Before it happens. The U.S. has always shown a peculiar eagerness in avenging alleged chemical attacks. But as investigative journalist Rick Sterling notes, this is perhaps the first time that a senior U.S. diplomat has pinned the blame on Damascus before an attack has even happened. He said, in the past, when an incident happened, they automatically claimed they knew who was responsible, even before there was an investigation, even before there was any evidence. And now they're even gone further. Even before the incident happens, they claim to know who has done it before they done it, before anybody did anything. Sterling noted that all the serious investigations into chemical weapons going back to 2013 ultimately pointed the finger to terrorists, who, after all, are the ones who stand to benefit. As a matter of fact, when we opposed this in 2013, saying we don't want to be Al-Qaeda's Air Force, we don't want to be their missile defense either. When we opposed that, eventually, it wasn't just the Russians who said it wasn't Assad's that could have done this gas attack. It was also the UN, and it was eventually the U.S. military, because we took our time. And on the basis of what happened in the U.K., Nikki Haley was screaming at the top of her lungs at President Trump, who this anonymous op-ed piece is saying, look at this. He took so long to do this while we had this attack going on in the UK. Well, they hadn't even determined what the chemical was. And it wasn't Novichok. You had a doctor who worked on these people for a half hour. If it had been Novichok, she would have been dead. They would have been dead. Everybody would have died. It's 8 times more potent than VX nerve gas. The doctor who worked on them said it looked like they had opioid overdose, which is consistent with the BZ gas that the people who eventually tested it for the Organization for the Prohibition of Chemical Weapons, that Swiss lab that they turned it over to, they said, we found BZ gas, and we found a pristine, virgin, undegraded source of Novichok. And that was months after it happened. That doesn't happen with Novichok. It degrades very quickly. So that was planted. There wasn't any investigation, but you had Nikki Haley and you had Theresa May demanding that President Trump do something, putting him in a box. And then this author says he complained about being put in the box. Every time they do an investigation, they find that it has no evidence there. Goes on to say the Syrian government has no interest, no advantage, no motive in a chemical weapons incident. As a matter of fact, that's what Russia Insider said as well. They said, quoting Nikki Haley, if they want to continue to go the route of taking over Syria, they can do that. She's talking about the Syrian government taking over Syria. Okay. Okay. But they can't do that with chemical weapons. They can't do it assaulting their people, and we're not going to fall for it. There are a lot of morons in a hurry who think that Nikki Haley hung the moon because she criticizes the UN, and they don't see the false flags and the wars and the death that she is trying to push. She said, if there's chemical weapons that are used, we know exactly who's going to use them. Well, you know, Russia has taken the extraordinary step, as well as Syria, to go around and say, look, we see that rebels are stockpiling this stuff, and we know that you're encouraging them to do that, you and John Bolton. And so, as Russia Insider says, well, there's two possibilities here. Number one, the possibility number one is that the actual literal terrorist factions occupying Idlib, which is the only place left, by the way, folks, the only place, according to people that work for President Trump, they said this is the last stronghold of the ISIS, Al-Qaeda terrorists that John McCain had his picture taken with, went there to support financially in every possible way. This is their last stronghold. And as Ron Paul said, why can't we just leave Syria alone? The places that the Syrian government has driven out the terrorists, places like Aleppo, you now have Christians able to celebrate Easter for the first time in years. There hasn't been a mass slaughter. There was a mass slaughter in places like the Black Stadium when ISIS controlled those areas. They were executing people on a daily basis in the Black Stadium, publicly executing them. So here's two possibilities. One, that the terrorist factions occupying Idlib are on the cusp of defeat with nowhere to escape. And they know for a fact that the U.S. and its allies have launched repeated attacks on the Syrian government following chemical weapon allegations without waiting for an investigation. They also know for a fact that multiple high-level officials like Nikki Haley and John Bolton and others have stated that they will carry out aggressive attacks against the Syrian government in retaliation for any perceived chemical weapons attack. So maybe they'll do it just to provoke that weapons attack. Or here's another possibility. On the cusp of victory, the Assad government decides to do the one thing that risks a U.S.-led regime change military intervention in order to accomplish the crucial strategic masterstroke of killing a few kids with chlorine gas in front of a bunch of white helmets with cameras. So while you think about that, think about Nikki Haley and think about this anonymous op-ed piece. Had quite a few Silicon Valley companies move to deplatform InfoWars off of social media, to block us off of YouTube, and to do other things overtly after having shadow banned many accounts, having manipulated search results and so forth for many conservatives for quite some time. That covert censorship was followed, and they used InfoWars and Alex Jones as the first example of overt censorship. And that was done on August the 6th. And as I read to you earlier in the program, we had Oliver Dorsey, who became the front for all of this. Darcy, I keep saying Dorsey and Darcy. I get the two of them mixed up. Because one of them is with Twitter. That's Jack Dorsey. Oliver Darcy is a CNN, and the two of them seem to be working together. They seem to know that this is going to be happening, and I'm going to show that to you in just a moment. But first, I was just going to go back and recap just a little bit. I played for you earlier in the broadcast, Alex Jones confronting this guy who had been openly lobbying for Twitter, the last place that we were on, to take us down on social media. And you know, making a case for this and saying, well, even though we've had the CEO go on record and other officials of Twitter go on record saying that InfoWars hasn't broken any rules, I've talked to a Twitter spokesperson, an anonymous spokesperson, that he keeps quoting throughout his article, saying, oh, they did this and they did that and they broke rules, never saying what rules are broken. So Darcy talks to an anonymous source, a spokesperson, he said, an anonymous spokesperson, unnamed, at Twitter, that is saying exactly the opposite of what Jack Dorsey, the CEO, was saying. Dorsey, again, we knew that he was going to do this because he said, well, they haven't broken any rules, but I'm going to change the rules and I'm going to look at what they do off platform. Well, you ought to take a look at what CNN is doing, because CNN sent a reporter down to harass a lady down in Florida. Remember that? Remember that? Knocked on the lady's door and said, "Are you a Russian bot?" You know, and just harangued her there. Now, why didn't all of CNN get taken down for that report? Because that's essentially something that is far worse than what Alex Jones did, talking to this reporter using an anonymous source, saying that this anonymous spokesperson at Twitter is saying stuff in direct contradiction to the CEO of Twitter. And on that basis, and on some unnamed, unspecific, vague charges that we somehow broke the rules, according to this anonymous spokesperson, that we should be taken off. And Alex Jones confronts him about that and about his continual lobbying and CNN's lobbying to take us down. And then they shut us down, saying that that is abusive. And I want you to hear a little part of that exchange, whereas Alex Jones is talking to him. He doesn't say anything except for this. This is the one thing that Oliver Darcy says. He looks at Alex Jones and says, "You still on Twitter? Still on Twitter?" Maybe he knows something that Alex doesn't know. Listen to this little snake as Alex Jones is talking to him. Play that clip.
Oliver Darcy, that lady.
What was that?
Anything to say?
No, I have nothing to say to Alex. Good seeing him here.
Yeah, all he wants to do is silence everyone so he can then lie about him and get away with it.
You're broadcasting on Twitter right now, I think, right?
We're going on a lot of places.
Right. You're being really silenced?
Yeah, you've been trying to silence me there. Keep asking why I'm there and then lying about what I said.
Yeah, you're broadcasting on Twitter right now, huh? Well, enjoy that, because I've been talking to Jack, and we're going to do something about that. And so maybe they were talking. I don't know. Maybe they weren't. But Breitbart points out, and many people have noticed it, Michael Tracy said, Twitter and CNN's Oliver Darcy both announced the Alex Jones news at precisely 4:47 p.m. That's interesting. You know, I thought it was kind of interesting yesterday, as Scotland Yard says, we've now got evidence that the Russians did this Skripal thing, because, look, we got photographs of two individuals, and you look at the timestamp on it, and it's down to the exact second. And you got two different photos with two different individuals in exactly the same spot at exactly the same time, down to the second. And you can see 30 feet around them that there's a... So either they're time travelers or they're running faster than Usain Bolt. They pointed out on, I think it was RT, pointed it out. And they just forgot to Photoshop that part of it, kind of like Obama forgot to Photoshop certain aspects of his birth certificate. But it's also interesting that at exactly the same time, Darcy and Dorsey announced the Alex Jones news. Now, Michael Tracy says, "I'm not asserting any conspiracy. The more banal and accurate explanation, as usual, is that reporters have no compunction about engaging in what gives the impression of weird corporate coordination." Well, I am asserting a conspiracy. I don't have any problem saying that coincidences like this are extremely unusual and ought to pay attention to it. And actually, the people at Breitbart noticed this as well. They said a tweet from CNN's Oliver Darcy was published at exactly the same time as the Twitter publicly announced the ban. And they pointed out that other establishment publications also ran full articles on Jones's ban at exactly the same time that Twitter announced that. That means that they gave them enough time, and these organizations would be BuzzFeed, AP, The New York Times, CNN. All these people were notified in advance. Enough time in advance that they can write a full article. And then Twitter makes the announcement, and they all publish their articles at exactly the same time. AP, breaking: Twitter is permanently banning conspiracy theorist Alex Jones and InfoWars for abusive behavior. Behavior that was not as abusive as what CNN did to that lady in Florida. She had done nothing. Oliver Darcy had leveled and tried to get an entire organization shut down. He had lobbied repeatedly for InfoWars to be censored. What a piece of scum. When you are a journalist and you're opposing freedom of the press, that really does make you a piece of scum, in my opinion. And as you heard in the longer clip that I played earlier, there was another individual there who was saying, "You know, hey, how you doing, Oliver? Yeah, you know, I'm sorry to see you take this turn after you've gone to CNN, because you used to be an honest reporter. You used to understand freedom of the press, but you don't anymore." And that's a real issue. And so what do we do about this? There's an article on The Verge, How to Break Up Facebook, Google, and Other Tech Giants. I talked to the Freedom Watch guy. What's his name? Can't remember now. just dropped it. Anyway, he was talking about doing antitrust regulations. And I don't think that antitrust is the way to go. Larry Klayman. Larry Klayman said he's been involved in antitrust regulation before that broke up the Bell telephone companies. That didn't last too long, unfortunately. And see, that's the problem. We have a time limit because this has to be done before the election. We're 60 days out from the election. This is a big reason why this is happening to InfoWars right now. And so we have an urgent time, short time frame to get something done, number one. Number two, these things are undone in the long term. Remember, the first antitrust regulations were done against John D. Rockefeller. Now, Rockefeller had a monopoly on oil. When they first discovered oil at the beginning of the Civil War, you know, they had been dependent on southern sources for pine products to take that to light lamps and so forth. When that dried up, so to speak, because of the Civil War, they had to find other sources. They found that they could use the oil that was basically bubbling out of the ground, like the Beverly Hillbillies story, right? They found that up in Pennsylvania. They had it had so much of it there, and they didn't know of it existing anywhere else. And they thought that that was the only place that it existed. Now, John D. Rockefeller, who bought his way out of serving in the Civil War, used that experience to establish a monopoly. He thought he had it that cornered by cornering the refineries there in Pennsylvania. Then something happened, and it wasn't antitrust regulation. What they did was they discovered later on, after he had that monopoly, they discovered oil in Texas. So then he moved to Ohio because the oil was coming up the river there. He moved there and established a monopoly on oil refineries in Ohio. But then he wasn't broken up by the antitrust regulation. They just created interlocking directories to get around that. The thing that stopped that monopoly, at least temporarily, was the discovery of oil in the Middle East. And so it's the marketplace, not regulation out of Washington, that's going to give you any lasting result on this. So we're going to have somebody out there. But right now, we need to have something done. And there is a legal precedent. Again, it was pointed out, an excellent article of Breitbart. Jack Dorsey said that Twitter is a public square more than five times in his testimony. That is the key. The Supreme Court decision in 1946, Marsh versus Alabama, that is the key. Even if this is something that is privately owned, if it is a public square, as it is, as Jack Dorsey admits that Twitter is, as we know that Facebook is, and we know that Google is, they are public squares. And that means that even if they are privately owned, they can't throw people off. That is a Supreme Court decision. Let's see the Justice Department do something about that. Hello, anybody there? Jeff Sessions, you awake? Do something about this. Folks, if you want to do something about this, if you want to support InfoWars, go to InfoWarsStore.com. Pick up some coffee. We got a special offer just for our listeners here for the Real News in the Morning. 20% off with the code REALNEWS. And you can also get 50% off many other items. Go to InfoWarsStore.com.